Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vishnupad Paramahamsa Paribraja Kacharya Rastitaris Tathasu Sriman His Divine Grace Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nichalila Pravisaram Vishnupad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakota Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Seka Hosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sudvaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gora Bhakta Vindikija Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Kija Sri Vrindavan Dham Kija Sri Matuda Dham Kija Sri Nabadweep Mayapur Dham Kija Ganga Mai Kija Jamuna Mai Kija Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani Kija Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Kija Sri Harinam Sankirtan Kija Srimad Bhagavatam Kija Srila Prabhupada Kija Go Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Ajnana Timidandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Visakam Vitam Scha Namaram Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesya Sunyavadi Paschata Dushatarane Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Negama kalpaturo galitam phalam sukamukaram ritadravasam yutam pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam mahora hora sikabhuvibhavukaha Narayanam Namaskritya Nanam Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Nashta Prayasu Abhadrasu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Sloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naistiki Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 4, Chapter 11, Swayambhuva Manu advises Dhruva Maharaj, Text 20. Na vai swapaksha asya vipaksha eva va parasya mrityo vishataha samam praja tam davamanam anudavanti anisha yata rajamsi anilam bhutasangaha navaisvapaksho syabhipaksharevava Parasya mrityo vishata samam praja tam davamana manudavam chanisha yata rajam sanilam bhuta sangaha navaisvapaksho syabhipaksha evava Parasya mrityo vishata samam praja tam davamana manudavam yanisha yata rajam syanilam bhuta sangaha
Tam
Dabamana Manu Dabam Yanisha Yata rajam syamilam bhuta sangha. Ladies.
Navai
svapaksho syamipaksha eva va. Parasya mrityo vichata samam praja. Tam dhavamana manu dhavantyanisha. Yata rajam syamilam bhuta sangha. Somebody else? No ladies know how to chant Sanskrit? Navai svapaksho syamipaksha eva va. Parasya mrityo vishita samam praja. Tam dhavamana manugamantisha. Yata rajam syamilam bhuta sangha. Any girls here? No girls. Not. Vahi. However. Swapakshaha. Alai. Asya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vipakshaha, enemy. Eva, certainly. Va, or. Parasya, of the Supreme. Mrityaho, in the form of time. Vishataha, entering. Samam, equally. Prajaha, living entities. Tam, him. Dhavamanam, moving. Anudavanti, follow behind. Anishaha, dependent living entities. Yata, as. Rajamsi, particles of dust. Anilam, the wind. Bhuta Sangaha, other material elements. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in His feature of eternal time, is present in the material world and is neutral towards everyone. No one is His ally, and no one is His enemy. Within the jurisdiction of the time element, everyone enjoys or suffers the result of his own karma or fruit of activities. As when the wind blows, small particles of dust fly in the air, so according to one's particular karma, one suffers or enjoys material life. Please repeat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in His feature of eternal time, is present in the material world and is neutral towards everyone. No one is His ally and no one is His enemy. Within the jurisdiction of the time element, everyone enjoys or suffers the results of his own karma or fruit of activities. As when the wind blows, small particles of dust fly in the air. So according to one's particular karma, one suffers or enjoys material life. Purport. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original cause of all causes, He is not responsible for anyone's material sufferings or enjoyment. There is no such partiality on the part of the Supreme Lord. The less intelligent accuse the Supreme Lord of being partial and claim that this is why one enjoys in this material world and another suffers. But this verse specifically says that there is no such partiality on the part of the Supreme Lord. Living entities, however, are never independent. As soon as they declare their independence of the Supreme Controller, they are immediately put into this material world to try their luck freely, as far as possible. When the material world is created for such misguided living entities, they create their own karma, or fruit of activities, and take advantage of the time element. And thereby they create their own fortune or misfortune. Everyone is created, everyone is maintained, and everyone is ultimately killed. As far as these three things are concerned, the Lord is equal to everyone. It is according to one's karma that one suffers and enjoys. The living entity's higher or lower position, his suffering and enjoying, are due to his own karma. The exact word used in this connection is anicca, which means dependent on their own karma. The example is given that the government gives everyone the facilities for governmental action and management, but by one's own choice, one creates a situation which obliges him to exist under different types of consciousness. The example given in this verse is that when the wind blows, particles of dust float in the air. Gradually, lightning occurs, and then torrents of rain follow, and thus the rainy season creates a situation of varieties in the forest. God is very kind. He gives everyone an equal chance, but by the resultant actions of one's own karma, one suffers or enjoys in this material world. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in his feature of eternal time is present in the material world and is neutral towards everyone. No one is his ally and no one is his enemy. Within the jurisdiction of the time element, everyone enjoys or suffers the results of his own karma or fruit of activities. As when the wind blows, small particles of dust fly into the air, so according to one's particular karma, one suffers or enjoys material life. So it's interesting. Prabhupada says here that the living entities, when they come into the material world, they take advantage of the time element. And at the same time, he's saying that we're born, we're maintained, and then we die. So where's the advantage? So, taking advantage of the time element, Krishna is time, Kalosmi, the compelling factor, if you like. Everybody has to work under the compulsion of eternal time, and no one can escape that. So, although we are, as Prabhupada says here, we can act freely, as much as or as far as is possible, still, everybody's actually under a supreme controlling factor. Nobody is entirely free to do whatever we like. But at the same time, that supreme controller is not taking responsibility for the actions and reactions of the living beings that are in this material world. So then who is responsible? Yeah. If we have to take advantage of time, and if nothing is ultimately under our control, then why should we have to accept the results of our activities? Yeah, if those actions are allowed to be performed by the time element, and if the results of those actions are then heaped on our heads, then why should we be responsible? Why is God not responsible if he's actually in control of everything? This is the dilemma. It's a little difficult to understand. But in the Bhagavatam, it's explained very nicely what this material world actually is and how the living beings are situated within it. In the spiritual world, there is a compelling factor. Krishna's flute and other instruments. Yeah. In the description in the Nectar of Devotion, Vaibhava, it means under compulsion. Love of Godhead, which arises out of compulsion. So, Krishna Especially, he has these four different features or characteristics which he doesn't manifest in any other form. Even as Lord Narayan, he's analyzed as having 60 qualities. But Lord Krishna has 64. So one of them is performing wonderful activities. The other one is having very wonderful devotees that engage in those wonderful activities. The other one is that Krishna is the essence of all beauty. And the other one is that he has a flute. And that flute is a compelling factor. Yeah, it's an analysis. There's two forms of love of Godhead. One is basic and the other one is compelling. And the basic one is Krishna himself. And the other feature, the compulsion, comes from anything that's attached to Krishna, connected with Krishna, which by coming in contact with, one is impelled to love Krishna. So in that way, the flute, the sound of Krishna's flute, is the way that he controls compels all his devotees in the spiritual world, one of the ways, to love him. Yeah. So just like when Krishna goes, he gets up in the morning, he plays his flute. All the cowherd boys hear Krishna's flute and know, now this is the time. We have to go out and go with Krishna to the forest. We have to go and play with him. So that signal is the flute. It's irresistible. Similarly, when Krishna's coming back at night time, he plays his flute, and Mother Jasoda hears that flute and knows, oh, now Krishna's coming back. Yeah, we have to get his supper ready and prepare for his return. So she doesn't hear Krishna's flute sometimes when it's supposed to be the evening. Then she becomes dizzy. Dizziness, that's one of the symptoms. She doesn't hear Krishna's flute, so she becomes dizzy. Yeah. So the flute is an impulse. It's a compelling factor by which Krishna agitates the love of his devotees for himself. So that compulsion in the spiritual world is all situated around Krishna's desires. That's the spiritual world. It's a land, a world of desire. But it's a world of Krishna's desire, not ours. The ordinary living, or the subordinate living beings, they're subjugated willingly by Krishna's desires. Whatever Krishna wants, whatever Krishna decides to do, everybody cooperates with that, and everybody tries to do their best to serve the desires of Krishna, who is the supreme enjoyer. So there's a very wonderful exchange. In the material world, it's also a place of desire. Same thing. It's a place of desire. But in the material world, the supreme desire is that of the living beings. And Krishna's desire is sublimated subordinated by his own will to the desire of the living beings. So you have two places. Desire is the key thing. Yeah. Everybody has desire. So how we fulfill that desire, or whose desire we fulfill, decides whether we're in the spiritual world or whether we're in the material world. So in the material world, that desire of the living beings is activated by Krishna's flute. The same thing. Yeah, there's a compulsion in the spiritual world, Krishna's flute. And in the material world, we find that when Lord Brahma is born, the first thing, when he gets instruction, it comes to him in the form of the sound of Krishna's flute. In some places it says he hears it within his heart. In other places it says that it goes in through the eight ear holes that he has. And then when he speaks, the sound of Krishna's flute, that is the Gayatri Mantra. So that Gayatri Mantra is, when it's chanted properly, perfectly, yeah, by a qualified brahmana, somebody who's situated entirely in goodness, that Gayatri Mantra actually transports one into the pastimes of the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world. That is the meaning of the Gayatri Mantra in its essence. Yeah. So it describes the, in essence, the seed mantras, Klim, Dimahi. This is mentioned in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam begins with the Gayatri Mantra. It describes the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or it indicates the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Bhagavatam is the expansion of the Gayatri Mantra. And in the Bhagavatam, therefore, it's called the Spotless Purana, because it's only about Krishna's desires, and it's not about ours. Yeah, there's lots of other literature that describes our desires and how to fulfill them. But this literature describes how to fulfill the desires of the Supreme Lord, and therefore it's none different from Krishna. It is the spiritual world. And when we read the Bhagavatam, we become compelled, if we read it properly or if we hear it properly, from a qualified source, we feel that compulsion to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if we don't read the Bhagavatam, we feel the compulsion to try to serve our own desires. Yeah. So this is a very nice arrangement that's been given here. Under this supreme force, time. Time is that compelling factor under which everybody has to work. So Lord Brahma, he's the first living being, and he is working under the impulse created by time. Yeah. He has to do his business. He knows he's got some duties to do. And, of course, being the original living being in the universe and being born directly from the body of Lord Vishnu, of course, his outlook on the universe is somewhat different from ours. He wants to serve. Although he's in the material world, but still he has this impulse to serve Krishna. And that comes from the sound of Krishna's flute within his heart. So he's got that connection. So we as living beings in this material world have to decide what we want to do with our desires. Desire you can't avoid. Yeah? Krishna says in the Gita that every living being cannot refrain from being active even for a moment. That action, that movement, that is the expression of desire of the living beings. If you have no desires, you're not alive. You're dead. Yeah? So, activity, movement. So, we see, therefore, in the first verse of the Brahma Samhita, Om Bhur Bhuvah Svah Tat Savitur. Savitur indicates the sun. So, Lord Brahma advises that the Gayatri Mantra has to be chanted as soon as the sun comes up, because it marks the beginning of the period of activity for the living beings. Savitur, Om Bhur Bhuvah Svaha, the three planetary systems, are subordinate to Savitur, to the sun. The sun is the chief planet. So the Gayatri Mantra describes immediately the compelling force in this material world, time. How do we measure time? By the movements of the sun. Yeah? Every living being is in sync with the movements of the sun. Every planet is nourished by the sun. Being deprived of the sun's rays, what kind of activity can one have? So everybody is enlivened. This is the meaning in the first verse of the Gayatri Mantra, that we become enlivened by the rays of the sun, coming from the Supreme Lord who is situated within the sun. Yeah, Hiranmaya. Yeah, Hiranmaya means the sun. So the Hiranmaya, the controller of the sun, is Lord Narayan. So immediately, those who are in the Brahminical stage of life, they worship the Supreme Lord through the Gayatri Mantra, recognizing that he is the supreme regulative principle in this universe, Savitur. Yeah. And then everything else comes from that. So in that way then, if we have a consciousness of the presence of the Supreme Lord in the form of time, then even if we're in this material world, we can still fulfill our goal or our desires of becoming happy. Because real happiness rests with Krishna. Krishna is eternal, Krishna is unlimited, and therefore relationship with Krishna lasts forever, it always goes on, and it's always increasing. That is real satisfaction. So if we're compelled by the descriptions of Krishna and the spiritual world, by the descriptions of Krishna's devotees, if we're compelled by the sound of Krishna's flute, then we can actually achieve that unlimited eternal happiness that we're always seeking. But if we get our compulsion from other things, Yeah, if we see the screen of Maya and not what's behind it, and we become dazzled by that, our compulsion is a bit entirely, it produces an entirely different result. You get born, you get maintained for some time, and then ultimately you get killed. That is time. So there's a compulsion there, and Prabhupada mentions that even an atheist has to bow down before the Supreme Lord. Yeah, he may not do it voluntarily, but at the time of death he must bow down. Yeah, it means he's finished. And then he's pushed on. So where he goes and what he does next, of course, that's where karma comes in. That's his results of his own activities based on his own desires. He's been given some facility. So he's trying to utilize time. Time is the factor, the compulsive factor. It brings everything, just like the flute is a compulsive factor in bringing about love of Godhead in the spiritual world. In the material world, the time element is the compulsive factor which brings about the conditions under which a living being can try and enjoy himself separately from Krishna. That's time. It's a regulative principle. So that way then, we get pushed according to our desires from one place to another. But they're our desires. And because we've made our desires prominent and we've subordinated Krishna's desire, we've practically forgotten Krishna's desire, therefore we are responsible for the reactions that come according to the activities that we want to perform. Even if Krishna permits us to do that and supplies all the different ingredients by which we can enjoy ourselves or try to enjoy ourselves as far as possible, still it's our desire that these things are supplied, you know, in reciprocation to. And therefore we get the results, not Krishna. Krishna's neutral. All right, you want to play like this, here you go. Here's, you know, the body of a lion, here's the body of a human being, here's the body of a demigod, here's the body of a maggot. You know, there's lots of different kinds of bodies, and these are all responses to our desires. And Krishna takes a neutral stance. He doesn't get involved, but we have to be active, we have to do something. We are by nature subordinate to him and dependent upon him. And therefore, if we are to do anything at all, Krishna is the one who has to enable that. If we want to love him in the spiritual world, Krishna enables that by the sound of his flute, by the sound of his buffalo horn, through his the association of his devotees. There are many impulses for loving Krishna, to increase our love of Krishna. And if we want to enjoy in the material world, Krishna is the only one that can enable us to attempt to do that. He's still the supreme, even though, you know, he's not apparent in this material world. But just because we say he doesn't exist, doesn't mean that he doesn't exist. It just means that we don't see him. But he's still there, and he is the one who gives us the facility for whatever we want to do. So this relationship of supreme and subordinate and their eternal connection is the key to understanding happiness and distress and why living beings apparently have to suffer, or, in, you know, one living being apparently suffers and another living being apparently enjoys. It's not whimsical. It's not whimsical. Yeah, it's very specific to our own desires, and we have to take the responsibility for that. Yeah, even though we are dependent on the Supreme Lord. But the responsibility for what we do is ours in this material world. Yeah, everybody knows that in counseling. If you want to get anywhere with somebody who's having problems, the first thing that you have to do is to get them to take responsibility for their own actions. Yeah. Otherwise, you're not going to get anywhere with them. You're not going to get any change in the heart. Yeah. So people in the material world, first thing is that they have to, if they don't want to suffer, they have to understand why they're suffering, yeah, on whose account they are suffering. And here the answer is given very specifically in this verse, that they are suffering due to their own activities, yeah, and no other cause. So that means we, if we want to get out of a condition of suffering and get into a condition of real happiness, we have to first of all take responsibility for our own actions, and then we have to, you know, develop the desire to adopt the actions which will lead us to real happiness. And that also is supplied by Krishna, the information, yeah, how we should proceed, having come to this point where we say, Kayami, who am I? What the heck am I doing in this place? Yeah, I remember one of our god brothers, my senior sannyasi. Some years back in England, there was this gentleman, Leonard Wilder. So he was doing regressive hypnosis, yeah, taking people back beyond their births, and sometimes, you know, people would reveal things from their past lives even. So he regressed this one senior devotee, and he took him back to his birth. So he happened to have been born in an Eastern European country. He was later on transferred to America and was brought up there. But he was born there, in this Eastern European country. So when he got him in this, you know, hypnotized state, you know, sometimes you actually become the, you know, that you go back to the state of mind that you were as a child, or, you know, as a particular, or in the womb even. So he was a small child. So the first thing that he said when he was in that regressed state was, "What am I doing here?" Yeah. As a small child, he's thinking, "What am I doing here?" Yeah. So this is when you think like that, Kayami, who am I, and why am I suffering? Yeah. Then at that point, then, you know, you become eligible to take instruction. You become eligible to be instructed, and take up the path which leads to real happiness and real satisfaction. Yeah. This is, you know, the fundamental principle of making any progress in life. We have to take responsibility. We have to think, why am I here? Where am I going? We have to question, you know, sincerely our own existence. Then Krishna can very, you know, easily, or very carefully, bring us to a point where we come back to a state of pure, unadulterated Krishna consciousness. Through the association of devotees, through the Shastra, Guru, Sadhu, these authorities are there to guide us and get us out of this confusing morass of material life, this, you know, bewilderment, you know, why am I suffering, why am I, you know. Nobody knows anything. Nobody knows where they're coming from. They don't know why they're here. They don't know where they're going. They don't know what to do or what's not to be done. Janana Vidurasara, this is the Asuras. Yeah? Those who are not Brahminical, those who are not situated in the mode of goodness, yeah, this is their position, Janana Vidur. They don't know what's to be done and what's not to be done. Yeah? They're bewildered at every stage of life. So to get out of that bewilderment, then, you know, right at the very beginning, Krishna, you know, creates this material universe. All the living entities have to be injected within it, but the very first thing, yeah, that goes into the universe with them is the Gayatri Mantra, the reminder of Krishna. It comes out, it goes, appears in the heart of Lord Brahma, it comes out from his mouth. He speaks that to the first living beings who are to, you know, progenate this universe. So this is the principle on which this material universe is built. Yeah, in the beginning was sound. That sound is the sound of the Gayatri. That Gayatri is the sound of Krishna's flute, which is the compelling principle of the spiritual world. Yeah, the compelling principle of real love and real happiness. So right at the very, very beginning of the creation of the universe, the means to get out of it is supplied. And all we have to do is become a little bit intelligent and realize that our position here is not very good and want to get out. We have to want it. We have to desire it. We have to change our desire from putting ourselves as supreme and Krishna as subordinate and go back to the natural condition of putting Krishna as supreme and ourselves as subordinate. That's where our desire should go. And as soon as we do that, then this impulse to go back home, back to Godhead, immediately comes about. It's an impulse. Everybody's working on impulses. So we want to be impelled in the right way. You can't avoid impulse. It must be there. So the time element, Prabhupada sometimes describes, you know, as the impersonal representation of the Supreme Lord. It is the will of the Supreme Lord. Yeah, movement. It's what enables us to move in this material world. That's what Prabhupada's saying there. Where is that again? Take advantage of the time element. The time element enables us to move. Therefore, you'll see in the third canto, when it gives a description of time, it describes, first of all, the basic indivisible element of this material world, which is the atom. A single atom is indivisible, because the scientists claim they split the atom, but and it's called Paramanu, so whether you use the word atom, but there is, in this material world, a single indivisible building block on which all other bodies are formed by combinations of that. That is the Paramanu, or the atom. Yeah, it cannot be reduced any further. So that is the subtle representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the subtle representation of time in this material world. And as soon as you get a combination of atoms, that is movement. Then you've got time. Then you can start to measure time. Otherwise, it's immeasurable. It's eternal. It's the will of God. How can you measure it? In this material world, though, we attempt to measure it, and the way that you measure it is by observing the movement of atoms in their combinations. As soon as they start to come together, there's the movement, yeah, of atoms. So you can try and measure that in the sunlight. Yeah. So then it describes all the different divisions of time that are gradually generated by the movement of the sun over the atom. Yeah. As compared to this combination of atoms. So that is Krishna's will, and that's how we understand Krishna's will in this material world, as the time element, yeah, the supreme force. But it's impersonal. Yeah, you can't really enjoy time. Enjoy your time, you know, enjoy your holiday, enjoy. You can't actually enjoy time because these bunches of atoms that come together will also be dispersed by the same impulsive force. Just as they combine together to make this body, this body will be dispersed by the same impulse, time. So where is your enjoyment? So you cannot enjoy God in his form as time. It's an impersonal force. But when you go to the original form of time, that's Krishna himself, the supreme regulative principle in the spiritual world. Personal. The Supreme Lord, who is full of desires, unlimited desires, and shares those desires with his unlimited devotees. In that way then, you know, this is how the spiritual world is regulated. And you can enjoy, you know, time in his original form as the personality of Godhead, or you can enjoy with him. So there's this difference then between the spiritual and the mundane worlds. It's all a question of desire. Yeah, the regulative principle, the compulsive force, is Krishna in either place. But in one place you can enjoy, and in the other place you can't. That's all. You're still subjected to that impulse, that compulsive nature. But in one place, when you allow yourself to be subordinated to a particular kind of impulse, you get Vaibhava, you get love of Godhead. And in the other place, you get misery, suffering, lamentation, you know, ignorance, everything. So we have to make our choice. So this is what this is saying here, that as a result of our own activities, and those activities are born of our own desires, yeah, karma resha, krodha resha, rajaguna samudbhava. So in the material world, karma is there, desire is there, but when it's in association with or when we try to experience it in association with the lower modes of material nature, we get anger, we get lamentation, we get, you know, distress and suffering. And when we try to enjoy in the other way, in the spiritual world, the other kind of calm, yeah, the Karma Gayatri. The Karma Gayatri we also chant. So the Karma Gayatri is non-different from Krishna. It is Krishna himself. And when we become perfect in chanting that Karma Gayatri, then we realize the personality of Godhead and our relationship with him, and we enter into, you know, unending bliss. So this is our choice. What kind of calm or desire do we want to operate under? It's our choice. That's all. Okay, so we'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions? Sureshwara Prabhu.
Harishwara Prabhu, on the point of responsibility, sometimes in our preaching work, people complain that that we say we're constitutionally marginal, which means we have a capacity to misuse our free will, to desire wrongly, and that really, ultimately, when you get down to it, we're not responsible because of the way we're constituted. So how do you deal with this challenge?
Yeah, well, that irresponsibility is the cause of all suffering.
Right.
We're not responsible.
But we're constituted that way, with a capacity, a potential to misuse it.
We're constituted as parts and parcels of Krishna. Mm. So just as he's supremely independent, we have a minute independence, and that is expressed as our desire to either willingly accept Krishna's supreme position and love him, or reject that and try to put ourselves in his position. That's our choice. And if there was no choice, there'd be no question of love. So it works both ways, you know. If you want love, if you say you want love, then you have to realize that love is a choice. Yeah, it's voluntary. Love means giving. And if you actually give yourself to the right person, then you'll achieve the heights of, you know, unending, unlimited bliss and love. But if you don't want to give yourself to that supreme person, if you make another choice and you want, you know, yourself to be the center of all activities and everybody else give their love to you, well, okay, you've got that choice. Nobody's going to stop you. Krishna doesn't, you know, live with a bunch of robots. Being alive means having a choice. That is life. If you have no choice, you have no life. So we do have a choice. But we don't have the option of actually becoming supreme. We can be situated with the supreme, but we cannot be the supreme. So we're always subordinate, but we have that minute choice. And we have to take responsibility. Yeah. People suffer because they want to be irresponsible. The very word irresponsible, you know, immediately the connotation is, this person's going to suffer. Oh, you're being irresponsible. What does that mean? It means immediately you're going to, you know, this person's going to suffer. You become responsible, then there's the hope that you'll actually become happy, yeah, because you're owning up, you know, to your own actions, and, you know, you're accepting whatever reactions come from that, and you're willing to be instructed. So we can't be irresponsible. Yeah? Prodigal sons, Prabhupada said. Yeah, we can't be prodigal sons. We have to become responsible. We have to recognize who we're responsible to. So it's not Krishna's fault. It's our fault. People don't like to admit that. That's the problem. Yeah, they get caught in this, you know, well, if God's everything and God's all powerful, you know, then he's responsible. I don't have any responsibility. No, that's not a correct understanding. So it's due to a faulty understanding of the self that people become bewildered, you know, by this question of happiness and distress and how it's awarded in this material world. Therefore, you'll see practically every religion in the world nowadays, so-called religions, they have problems explaining why bad things happen to good people, or so-called innocent people, because they don't know the real nature of the self, their own selves, their ordinary self, and they don't know the real nature of the Supreme Self. And they don't know the reciprocation and the relationship between the two. And therefore, even their so-called religious practice is practically atheism. There's some awe and reverence there, some acceptance. Some people, you know, they do accept the will of God, you know. But a lot of people become bewildered because they don't have proper knowledge. And even though they claim to be, you know, they claim to be religionists, their idea of religion is something different from what is actually in the Bhagavatam, at least, you know, what is real religion. Just like this, you know, fellow, we've talked about it many times, Mr. Hare Krishna is a Greek rabbi. Yeah, he's a rabbi. He's supposed to be teaching people about God. What is his conclusion? You can have an all-powerful God or an all-loving God, but not both. Make your pick. So that's his choice, because he's ignorant, because he doesn't understand the nature of the self and the self's relationship with the Supreme Self. And he's claiming he's a rabbi and misleading so many people. That book was a bestseller. Why was it the bestseller? Because it resonated with people in their ignorance. Yeah, that's what I was thinking all along. Yeah, so they become atheists. They say they accept God, but they emasculate God. They make him powerless. Yeah, he's either a hard stone or he's, you know, a weakling. But this is a problem. The first thing is to get people to understand what they are as a living being. You are not this body. Prabhupada hammered that again and again and again. You'll never understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unless you first understand you are not this body. Yeah? When you understand you're a soul apart from the body, then you've got a chance of understanding everything else. But if you think you are this body, you'll become totally bewildered, even if you say you believe in God. And you'll see most religions in the world, they teach you are this body. It's a problem. They're in ignorance, actually. They're not real religion. When I was with Srila Prabhupada in Delhi in December of 1975, I'd been on his party about 2 weeks. Yeah, 2.5 weeks, like that. It was mid-December. And at that time, the Delhi temple was at Todamol Lane. It's a little kind of short street in Bengali markets. And the temple was a dive. It was a tiny little place. There was nowhere to stay. So Prabhupada was staying in a flat just further down the same street. And he would go up onto the roof to take his massage every, you know, noontime. So we'd just come back from Vrindavan, and I'd just been, you know, accepted by Prabhupada as his regular permanent servant. And so as soon as we got back to Delhi, Prabhupada went up for his massage. So as I began to massage him, he said, "So, do you know the philosophy?" You know, I was a bit taken aback, you know, Prabhupada was fronting me up. "Do you know the philosophy?" So I said, "Well, I think so, Srila Prabhupada." So he said, "So, tell me." So then I started off that, you know, every living being is a spirit soul. We're not the body, and every living being is a spirit soul, and we're eternally parts and parcels of Krishna. And Prabhupada stopped me. He said, "No." He said, "Yes, we are eternal, but we are not this body. This is the first thing." But he said, "This is how to preach. First thing, we're not this body." Then he said, "You can explain how we are part and parcel of Krishna." So that was my first private tuition from Srila Prabhupada, how to preach. First of all, make sure that people understand they are not this body, because if they don't understand that, they'll never understand anything about Krishna.
Yeah, I see that now. Because as long as there's a trace of the bodily concept, there's going to be a lingering resentment. And it's really all about a change of attitude. Instead of complaining about free will and potential and capacity, we simply have to see the beauty of it, that there is a possibility of loving Krishna. Why not use it right instead of just complaining about it? Thank you.
Any other questions? Mani Bhanda, use the microphone.
In most cultures, at least Western culture, I understand time has been more linear, as starting at a certain point and then just going ad infinitum. But the Vedic model, would we understand it as more cyclic rather than linear? Would that be a correct understanding?
Yes, Drudakarma Prabhu has written a very wonderful paper about the cyclic nature of time, or the effects of the cyclic effects of time, if you like. Time is ultimately eternal. But the linear measurement of time, it's not that we understand time is linear, but we understand, or we measure time in a linear way. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. Yeah. And in the Vedic literature, of course, we get these repeated appearances, you know, of the universe, and then this, you know, destruction, and then again it comes around. And the living beings who are eternal are repeatedly injected into it to experience another round of material activities, you know, and then again they come to rest, and then again they're reactivated. So it's going on and going on and going on. There was actually in Western science a period when, you know, it was touted that the universe is eternal, and in that sense there's no time. But that's been dispensed with in favor of, you know, the Big Bang Theory and this kind of linear progression. But whichever way you take it, whether you take it as cyclical or linear, you know, the result's still the same. You die. Right? Everybody's going to be killed. That's, you know, the ultimate effect of time, at least in reference to our present situations. Yeah. So, understanding the real nature of time, that it's eternal, neither linear nor cyclical. Yeah, it's cyclical in reference to this material world, but in the spiritual world, it's eternal. Yeah, what is that? It's not. What is it? The passing of time? How does that go? That last verse of the Brahma Samhita. Time is noticeable by its absence.
Conspicuous by its absence.
Yeah, there's no diminution of anything. Time diminishes. That's how we understand, you know, this regulative factor in the material world, that it diminishes everything. It sure, it brings everything into being and it maintains it, but it also diminishes it. But in the spiritual world, there's no beginning, there's no end, there's just present. Krishna's presence. And, you know, the living beings or the devotees' relationship with him, and it's always in the present. Okay, we'll finish there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.